we've already got quite a few of the regulars and a couple of people I don't recognize at this time. So it's always good, and I do try to keep a watch on that chat room for your questions. Sometimes I might miss one, but you know, it's kind of difficult to read and talk and listen all at the same time. So if that happens, I apologize, but I will try to keep an eye on it. Tonight, we're going to continue with our version of We Don't Know What We Saw. In the previous two shows, you met Jamie McDowell and Jack Peters and my husband, Randall Joyner. Jamie described mysterious balls of light, a vibration along her spine, and some sort of energy that knocked out her camera and knocked her and one of her crew members to the ground in the Oregon forest while investigating this strange phenomenon. Then we went to... He described light balls and what he had seen with Jamie, and he also, for analysis, and we're going to talk, well, I'm having a little distraction here, I'm sorry, it seems like we're having the same old echo thing, and I have muted the PAL talk room. That analysis I told you about of Jack's photos has been posted on Open Minds Forum. If you go to my board there, and it's real easy to register if you're not a member, I recommend it. There's some good people there. You go to the Joyner Report board, and there's a thread called Oregon Sightings, and the entire analysis is posted there. I want to thank Tony O'Cousin, also known as 11 August on the Open Minds Forum, because he just did a tremendous amount of work. And as it turned out, 8 out of 12 photos are unknowns. They could not be identified. 4 of them were identified as the moon. And I can certainly understand, after having been there in that pitch dark forest, how something like that could happen. You've got a lot of things going on around you, particularly that night with Jamie, and the moon was through the canopy of the trees, and that could happen easily, I think. So I want to just say thanks to Jack Peters for sharing his photos and letting us do an analysis. Tonio's work is always great, and I've really enjoyed working with him in the past and this time, too. Now, last time, we were a little short on time for Randall and I to tell our story, and I got some notes and things that, oh, gosh, another cliffhanger. Well, we're going to try to clear that up for you tonight, and we will be... also introducing Oregon Bob for the first time in an exclusive on the Joyner Report. But first, let me bring on my good buddy, Frank Warren of the UFO Chronicles, and he's going to co-host with me tonight. How are you doing, Frank?
I'm doing good, and Ange, it sure is a nice treat for me to be back with you as your co-host tonight. You know, we don't often get a chance to be on together, so it's, as I said last week, it's a double bonus. One thing that I think it's important to reemphasize is, you know, the fact that the last 2 weeks with these independent witnesses, they've never shared their respective experiences in any public venue before. I mean, those, like tonight, those were, in fact, Joyner Report exclusives. So what our listeners are hearing tonight, they're hearing it, they're going to hear it for the first time, as they did last week's show and the previous show before that. And those two witnesses, Jack and Jamie, they had those experiences because tonight's guest, whom we've been calling Oregon Bob, with her skepticism, as we all have been skeptical, you know, getting involved with this case, Bob was kind enough to invite them and to come to his house in the area, and he said, you know, come on out and you will witness this strange phenomenon that he's been subjected to for so long for themselves. And of course, when they did that, and as evidenced by their declarations in the previous 2 week shows, they in fact did experience all paranormal activity, and you know how I hate to use that label, but I don't know any other way to describe it. And not only did they experience these weird events, Bob went out and spoke with you and a small group, including Steve Allen, in Texas, and he was so persuasive with what he had to say and so credible, along with some photographs, that you and Randall followed him back to Oregon to go on an investigation, and that's what we were getting to last week. We were right into the meat of your sighting, if you will, and then we ran out of time, and I'm sure our listeners were basically doing the same thing I was. I mean, I was right on the edge of my seat. So if you don't mind, what I'd like to do is just kind of go back and recap that and start back where we left off before we bring on tonight's guest. And just to reiterate where we were when we left off last week, you had explained that you had gone out there. You had been there for your entire stay was 3 nights, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
One, either the first night or the second night, you actually did see something, but it wasn't too impressive. And then you made a call to Robert Powell to do a little Google search about possible luminescent things in the forest. And he, in fact, came back with what was a luminescent fungi.
That's true.
And basically you thought that's what it was. So you weren't too excited, and now you're into your third night. You're thinking, well, you know, you haven't seen much. You did see some luminescent stuff in the forest, but you pretty much weren't thinking anything was going to happen at that point, correct?
That's right. It was the third night, and we were pretty tired because we hadn't gotten much sleep the previous two nights. Well, not any sleep. We were sleeping during the day, actually.
And then Bob's driving down. You're out in the middle of nowhere in the Oregon forest. You were sitting in front. You were sitting shotgun. Randall was in the back, correct?
That's right.
And then was it who was it that saw the light first?
I think we all pretty much saw it at the same time. It was so bright on our right side that, you know, I remember going, what is that? Bob at the same time was stepping on the brakes. And he said, that's what we're looking for. And Randall had seen it too, and we all bailed out of the van because it was pretty spectacular. It was on a road I had already been down the two nights before, and there wasn't anything like that.
And in contrast to Jamie and or Jack's experiences, this wasn't an orb or a small light. This was something much more.
Yes, this was very bright. And at first I thought the light was coming from the object. And I started kind of scrambling down the side of the mountain. I went as far as I could. Randall grabbed me, you know, by my coat, wouldn't let me go any further because I really wanted to get close. But it was so... The vegetation in the Oregon forest is so dense, and there's logs, you know, fallen logs everywhere, and it is so dark. Even if you have a moon, it's just pitch black out there. So this thing was not natural. It wasn't there the two nights before. It looked really out of place. So you just trying to take it all in was... the first couple of minutes trying to figure out what you're seeing. And as I was looking at the object, which appeared to me to be a craft, a gunmetal steel gray color with three charcoal sort of opaque windows in a rectangular shape, and they protruded like a skylight on a house would. And then below it was something very dark, and it reminded me and Randall of like octopus legs or some kind of tentacles. Or, you know, I thought, could this be a tree trunk that has exposed roots, that the tree's been sawed down, and I'm really not seeing the bottom of the craft? And I never really could determine what that was, but it didn't absorb the light in the same way. And then I realized the light is not coming from the object. It's coming from the left and back towards us on the mountainside. And I couldn't figure out about the light source. So I tried to move right, and I went as far as I could in that vegetation, and I could never see the source.
And to be clear, as we stated last week, there wasn't anything. When you say tentacles, the first thing I think of is something moving. But there was no movement, correct?
No, there was no movement. It was very still. You know, I didn't want to take my eyes off of it because, you know, I halfway expected to see some movement, but I never did.
And this goes back to the commonality between different witnesses when they encounter something so surreal. You become frozen in your tracks. Everybody always says, well, why didn't you take pictures, or why didn't you do this? And now that you have walked in those shoes, I mean, you don't want to go anywhere. You want to keep your eyes on this thing, correct?
Well, as I said in the last show, if I'd had a $15,000 camera back in the van, I probably wouldn't have moved to go and get it. No, I probably wouldn't have. But Bob had an infrared camera. He was up behind us on the road, but we had only gotten it that day. It was late in getting there to us. We had rented it, and we didn't get to spend much time trying to figure that out, so we didn't get any viable photos with that.
And the light coming from behind it, could you discern what was causing the light? I mean, did you see the source? Or?
No, I could never see the source, and it wasn't behind the craft. It was out to the left side and back towards where we were, sort of like it was coming off the mountainside, but Bob, you know, did walk down the road because he was going to see if there was a better vantage point. And he said, y'all stay where you're at, and I'll be back. I'm going to see if there's a better place than this. And in just a couple of minutes, he came back, and he said, no, we're good. This is the best place to be, right here.
Well, now, the span of events, the entire time this whole thing lasted while you're observing what appears to be a craft, how long was that again?
About 9 minutes.
So did anything, there was no movement down there, you too steep to go down and check it out. Well, what's Randall doing? Is he with us tonight?
Yes, Randall's here.
Why don't we put him on and get the tail end of that?
Hello. You hear me?
Hi, Randall. Welcome back to the Joyner Report.
Thank you very much.
Well, you know, we discussed pretty much the first part of encountering what appears to be a craft, and y'all are sitting there, you're mesmerized by it. What takes place then?
Well, we're still watching the light, trying to figure out where it's coming from, and like I say, it's off to the west, back toward us, when this craft was sitting kind of more northwest from us, you know, off the road, and looking down off this couple, three layers of hillside there down to the bottom, mm-hmm. And we slid down first we could out. One time I thought I was going down because I was slippery and needles and stuff.
Whether you wanted to or not.
Yeah. But she's the one go down there. I said, I don't think I can get you back out because it's so, you know, like she's saying, you know, stuff piled here and there. You don't want you going to step in down in there. Especially if it's dark, too, at first. Then that light came on. You could see pretty well. And I had the goggles on, like I was telling you last week, trying to look around and see, too, if I could see anything else around from any direction or people or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. But I could never see nothing. And I just kept looking and trying to move for vantage points, but you couldn't get one where we was at.
You know, having interviewed so many people that have had various encounters and whatnot. And of course, here we have a craft on the ground, or what appears to be a craft. Just the hair standing up on my arm while y'all recount that to me. Now, at one point, the light did go off. Is that correct?
Yeah, it finally started, like he called it, a portal, whatever, on that hillside, started shutting, and it light started getting less and less and less until just finally closed, yeah, top to bottom. And
now, well, you just said the word portal, and just for our listeners' sake, there's a lot of talk about portals, and we're going to get that when we bring Bob out. We're going to get into that subject when Bob comes out. And that is one of the notions, that perhaps the light emanating was in fact from a doorway and or a portal. So we'll get into that a little bit further when we bring Bob out. So the light goes off at that point, and obviously you guys are just dumbstruck. I mean, what did you do then at that point?
I put the goggles back over. I could see because it was pitch black again, you know, just like it was previous before we come up on the thing. And here we was running, you know, down the road. I had to goggle on if I could see where we was going even, and looking around. But what was really strange to me, too, like, say I've hunted and been places in Colorado, Utah, and up in Vancouver fishing and stuff. I never seen nothing like this. You know, I've been deep in the forest and areas and never seen nothing like that.
Is there any way in your mind that could have been a hoax of any sort? I mean, do you think now Angela said that she felt there, she described it, the color, as being gunmetal, and then also both of you collectively agree appeared like there were windows on there. Did it seem that this could have been faked in any way, that this was staged, in your opinion?
I don't see how, but that's why we wanted to get closer down on it if we could. But I didn't see no way getting down there, and then we had to get out. I don't know how we could get out. That's what was worrying me. I had to get out.
Sure. And your adrenaline's got to be pumping at this time. I mean, mine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's sticking there, and when it got real dark, you know, it got really pumping in because he's trying to think, well, what's going on? You know, that's when I started putting them goggles back on so I could see.
So, of course, for our listeners, say goggles meaning the infrared goggles.
Night vision. Yeah.
And so you're not getting anything. Once that thing goes out, you're not seeing anything, even with the night vision.
No, I'm not seeing nothing moving, but I'm still looking at it and looking around and trying to figure out what's going on and what happened to the light, where it came from, you know, but I could tell that it wasn't coming from the craft like we thought at first when we pulled up there.
Any animals in sight?
That's what was really strange from the time we started. Really, I didn't ever see no animals because I was looking out every direction trying to see something, you know. Some places really thick and really steep. But I didn't ever see no animals out there. See, more in town where Bob lives than I did out in the forest there. And we drove a lot of roads.
As a hunter, doesn't that seem unusual?
Yeah, it did seem real strange. We even asked him. That's what he told us. Said usually you don't see no animals up here because it's really, you know, strange to me, you know.
So that, in essence, according to Bob, that was basically an element of when you experience these events, that it's a lack of animals.
Yeah,
for
right.
Whatever reason, the animals skedaddle.
Yeah, they don't stay there, it seemed like. Only thing I did probably hear was a screech owl one time, and that was not much of that, you know. But
how long did you guys stick around after the light went out?
I don't know. We sat there for a good while, for a little bit anyway. I don't know. At that time, I wasn't looking at my watch. I don't know. You know, you just kind of get caught up in the time and watching this and trying to figure out what's going on. I really didn't look at my watch.
Mm-hmm. When you decided to leave, or from that point to the time that you did leave, did anything else occur?
Yeah, that's when we seen the beam of, wasn't a beam of light, but an object is round and red and kind of orange red or whatever, come up, you know, kind of from where we were sitting down on the other ledge we'd went down to.
Mm-hmm.
By then, we'd got up and come back up towards the vehicle because we didn't know what was going on. Kind of gathering, see what we were sleeping up there again. Then this light object moved. I don't know how far across. It moved all the way across the front of us, back of this area, kind of where the light was coming from, shining out.
Uh-huh.
Up on the mountainside there.
Now, that had to scare the hell out of you. I mean, your adrenaline's already flowing, and then this light thing's coming towards you.
Yeah, it caught my attention.
So what'd you do? I mean, what'd everybody do at that point?
That's where we pretty well got into the vehicle, was watching them. That's why he said, we need to get out of here. They know we're here.
Time to go,
yeah.
Yeah, that is something else.
And it just kind of blew off towards the forest in the woods out there above us, you know, out in front of us kind of, and then I couldn't find him again. I don't know where he went.
Yeah. So at this point, you're heading back to Bob's place.
Yeah, we rode around, I think, on that after that and just kept looking. But we went down so many roads and back and forth, and one we went down, we couldn't get back. We had to back out of that one because the trees just fell across.
Yeah.
And that's pretty scary yourself.
No, having traversed some roads similar to that, in not in Oregon, but in Northern California, I completely understand.
Yeah, you have to back out. You couldn't turn around.
Yeah.
I'd like to interject something here if I can.
Yes, ma'am.
We've got a question. Obo in the chat room says, was the light observed without the night vision goggles? And yes, that's when we first saw this thing. It was so bright. We didn't need night vision goggles to see it. And when we actually got out of the van and started concentrating on what we were seeing, I did try to look at it through the night vision, but it was too bright. It bloomed out the field of view.
After the individual light came up to you, and then of course you left at that point. You didn't go straight back to Bob's. You searched around a little bit further, but that was uneventful. There, after that, those two events together, I'll say, it for the night.
Yeah, that was it. We did keep prowling around on the logging roads, and we went back to that spot a couple of times to see if the light had come back on or if it was still there, and that was it. There was nothing else that occurred that night.
And what, again, I forget, what time of the morning was that? That was late in the morning, correct?
Say that again?
What time was the sighting? What time of the morning? That was late in the morning? Or?
No, we were, it was before midnight. It was about 10:30.
Oh, it was? Oh, okay, so mm-hmm. Fairly early. Okay.
Right, which was kind of surprising.
Well, eventually, no other events occurred at that point after you searched around a little bit. So then you head back to Bob's house. I mean, what are you thinking?
Well, I was upset because our flight out was that morning, and I knew we needed to go back in the daytime. And you know, I had brought Ziploc bags and things like that in case I needed to collect any kind of evidence, but just to go back and look at it again in the daytime. And our flight was early that morning, and there wasn't any way to do it, and Randall had already taken his time off work, and but I knew that that was what should have been done, but we didn't get there.
Well, and of course, we'll hear from Bob directly shortly, but this was old hat to Bob. I mean, this is why he brought you there. This was no surprise to him at all.
No, he expected to see something. He said, he had told me in Steve Allen's office, if you will come, I will show you. He didn't have any doubt.
Yeah.
And the first two nights, it was very obvious that he and his wife were disappointed. Because
right.
Those were fairly quiet nights, but the third night, third time's a charm.
Right. And correct me if I'm wrong, but on the way to the airport, there was another event.
No, that was on the way from the airport when Bob picked us up.
For some reason, I get a brain block on that, and I get it, and I get that backwards. Well, just to recap on that quick, for anybody that missed last week's show.
Okay. We were traveling towards Bob's home, and Bob drives an old van, And as a matter of fact, it's not in real good shape. He uses a ski rope on his door handle to get it open. And he stopped. He said, look at this, you know. And he had told us there was an area there where he sometimes would drive through and see you. Well, he pulled over. Randall got out. Randall was looking up. And I could not get the sliding van door open. And I was screaming at Randall, get me out, get me out. And Randall's trying to look up and get me out of the van. And by the time I got out, it was gone. But I'll let Randall tell you what it looked like.
Well, it was a craft that flew over, and I couldn't see no identifying marks anywhere. I looked underneath it on the wings. Or what looked like wings. It was, I don't know, hard to explain the shape, but it was a kind of a black, it's kind of triangle shape. I don't know, it didn't really remind me of one of our planes from the military, but it possibly could have been, but I don't think so. And like I said, I didn't see no blinking lights, anything, and it came right over us. And I don't know, it couldn't have been, I don't know, 50, 60 feet above us, whatever, most of that area.
Now, you guys, of course, live by the military training area right there around Stephenville, and you're accustomed to military aircraft.
Yeah, every day and every night around here lately.
And you hear them.
Yeah.
I mean, you see a jet, an F-15, F-16, off in the distance, much like here. I'm in Sacramento, California, and we're surrounded by air bases, and I can tell one coming from a long ways off.
Oh,
in
yeah.
fact, just as an exercise, I always shout out what I believe it to be, and then lo and behold, you know, an F-16 flies by. I mean, you can hear these things from a long ways off. Was there any sound of this thing that you witnessed?
No sound. That's what really got me, and there wasn't no markings on it, I could tell.
Yeah.
And no lights flashing on it.
And you couldn't discern wings, but you feel that it was triangular in shape.
That's right. Yep. And it was a dark color. Real dark bottom of it. Cause I could see the bottom real well. I couldn't see nothing else. And it came right over, so I guarantee you, you know.
Now, I know, Randall, that you and Angela, of course, are both new to this, to the UFO business, so to speak. And I mean, what's going through your mind at this point, particularly on this trip? I mean, you're out there on an investigation, per se, and then you get off the plane. You're en route, and then you basically have a UFO sighting. I mean, that's got to be just, you got to be doing a double take and thinking, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular at the moment there. And I was trying to figure out what I was seeing going over, and I surely listened for sound. I was looking for markings and all that on it, trying to make out what it was.
Wow.
But it went over and went directly like he told me it would head towards these mountain areas and travel path.
And if I'm not... And no military in the near vicinity. I think there is a military base that Bob talks about, but not right in that specific vicinity that you were at that time, correct?
Correct.
Okay, interesting. Wow. Well, I would imagine the listeners are as excited as I am about recounting that. And just from my own personal perspective, just to let the listeners know, when I got brought into this case, you know, none of us knew Bob, and, you know, he started this with an anecdote, and of course, as a researcher, you know, I will listen to all these things. My personal perspective or how I proceed in research as the witnessing of a phenomena is the first step into scientific research. But one of the things that set the hook for me as I... touched on in last week's show is that I know Angela Joyner and Randall, and I know that they're not blowing smoke when they recount this particular experience, and that's what gave me pause for this case. Since that time, we've brought on Jack and Jamie, two respectable, sober witnesses, and they recounted their own respective experiences. And I'd like to tell the listeners that that's not all. There are a lot more witnesses. Many of them don't want to be named at this point in time. We're working on trying to get some of these other people out. But it doesn't end with just the few people here, you know, that have come forward. This case is really given me great pause, and it certainly needs further investigation. Anyway, Ange, are you still with me?
I'm with you.
I'll hand the reins back over to you.
Well, listen, this light phenomenon that Jamie and Jack described. Now, we have seen something like that in other areas of the country, or at least it's been reported on. I haven't seen it. And that was Marley lights, and then the Brown Mountain lights, and there was just a National Geographic show on that. So, you know, what as far as what these light balls are, you know, we're wondering, is this some sort of natural phenomenon? Is it, or is it some kind of spirit thing? You know, we don't really know.
I think, you know, not only the Marley lights and the Brown Mountain lights, which that documentary, I get, you said it was on recently. I missed that. We actually put a clip, a five-minute clip on that at the UFO Chronicles for those that are interested. And we also have articles on various orb-type phenomena in different parts of the country if you do a search at the site. And that's what you and I were talking before we came on. Is this a natural phenomenon? Or something else, or is it a singular phenomenon? Is Bob and company and you folks, you know, are people experiencing different things in the same area? You know, Jack and Jamie talked about the light phenomenon in orbs, whereas you say the word craft. I mean, that stopped me in my tracks. You thought what appeared to be windows. You know, we're getting into more of a classic, you know, flying saucer, a disc-shaped craft, nuts and bolts craft kind of thing, which is what really gets me excited, if you hadn't noticed. So you have to ask yourself, and this is why I go back to the paranormal label. I mean, I was brought into this thing as a ufologist, but it seems like there's a lot more going on than that. And
I think so, too. It does seem like there's more to it. When we're talking about Marley lights and the Brown Mountain lights, as far as I know, no one's ever reported being knocked down, the breath knocked out of them, and their equipment failing, as Jamie reported to us.
Right. Yeah, and the physical activity, which takes it up a notch, it puts it into a different category. And, of course, there's actually even more to it than just lights and or craft, as we will find out when Bob comes on. I just completely stymied by this, and it just goes to say that this thing needs to be looked into, and at every different angle that it can be looked into. This is and it's repetitive. This is happening now. When you were saying Bob says, come on out and I'll show you. It made me think of the movie Field, the Kevin Costner movie Field of Dreams, you know, build it and they will come, you know, come on out here and they will come, so to speak, because I think he's batting 1,000. I mean, everybody that has gone out to take him up on this, you know, to find out for themselves, they have, in fact, had an experience, to the best of my knowledge.
Right, I think so, too.
I don't think he's never been skunked. So, you know, it's a repetitive phenomenon, and it's ongoing. It just doesn't seem to go away.
I think something definitely is going on there, and it's going to take somebody that's got some research equipment and the right knowledge and the time to go out there to spend on that. But I think it's time to bring on Bob. What do you think, Frank?
I think it is time. Let's bring him out.
Okay. This is a Joyner Report exclusive, the Never Be Hurt. Now, I'm getting nervous. the Never Heard Before story of Bob Pitchell, also known as Oregon Bob, for the last couple of shows at least. Bob's a lifelong resident of Oregon. He's an avid outdoorsman who enjoys hunting, tracking, and fishing, and he has a great love for the Oregon wilderness. He also has worked on several inventions, one being the original bike bag, and has been involved with developing for others. Bob has been married to his sweet wife, Nancy, for 28 years, and they have three children. Randall and I stayed in Bob and Nancy's home, and Nancy was a gracious hostess, and I just loved her. She looks like Meryl Streep, too. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Glad to be here, Angie.
There's a lot of people that have been waiting for you to come on, and we've had a kind of a build-up to you being on the show. How do you feel about being here, Bob?
Well, actually, calmer than I thought I'd be.
Good.
Everything is, I'm just nice and calm and ready to go.
You did hear that drum roll in the back, right? For our trifecta, the culmination of the trifecta here.
I first met Bob in Steve Allen's office in Glenrose, and he told me how he stumbled upon this unique area. And first off, I would like for Bob to share that story with our listeners. And speak up, Bob, as much as you can so they can hear you.
Okay, I hope everybody can hear me. That was 2004, and I had answered an ad. A person wanted to find a tracker that could put him on black bear and cougar in their natural habitat, hopefully close together. He wanted to try to film some interaction. And I told him I was his man, and made arrangements. It was about 10 days before he came out, I found the perfect spot.
Hey, Bob, let me interrupt you. We're getting in our virtual auditorium. People are having a problem hearing you. Either hold your mic a little closer and or speak up just a little louder, please.
Okay, I hope that's better.
Getting better.
Okay, fantastic. And so I made a few recons out in an area, found the right area for the man. And actually, I cheated. I baited a few trails so that I could pull the bears in closer. Ended up meeting the gentleman. He had quite a bit of equipment. We arrived at this location that I had been to half a dozen times prior. Right at the right time, got things set up. Dusk was setting fast, and as everyone said, it gets dark out in these areas. But we were in more of an open area, facing a three-sided canyon, shallow canyon. And all of a sudden, we immediately get on pair. Bear are coming, and he's getting some shots. And something to my right caught my eye, and I looked over and saw two emerald green lights. The way that they were moving, I immediately knew it wasn't right. I took the night vision off and told him I would be right back. He was fine, and there was a pistol by his side. He knew about firearms. He felt safe. So I took off these lights. And they disappeared. And when I got closer, I could see that there was a small box canyon there. And I worked my way to the edge of the canyon. And looked down into the canyon. And a fading light that looked like a half moon. Crescent of the moon, half of it. And as I looked closer, I could see the lights that I had seen up above, the emerald green lights, were mixed in with an array of other colored lights that were just floating in the air. And then I noticed some movement in the coming out of the forest, some other lights. And then it's like everything started of light coming from under a huge brown spherical craft.
Wow.
And then I saw movement. And I was at a distance to where I could see silhouettes of two of these forms really well, and my heart just stopped.
Okay, let's stop right there because people aren't hearing. We've lost sound in the PalTalk chat room. People are telling me they can't hear, so I don't know what we need to do here.
We're going to have to go to the cell phone, Joe. I'm hearing you okay, but I'm getting a lot of collateral noise. But there, yeah, you're dropping off and on in the chat room.
Oh, that's
okay. Now Linda's saying that she can hear her on two computers, and on Joe's it never goes out, but on hers it seems like it's going in and out. So I don't really know. Joe, if you're listening, I don't know if you have any advice for us, but people are missing the story because they're not being able to hear, but in little snatches. So I'm wondering, Joe, if you want to try Bob on his cell phone, or you want us to keep going, or what do you think?
Welcome to live radio.
That's right. And some people are saying it's Pal Talk doing that. I don't know if you guys want to go to Ustream and see if it's like that.
And why don't you add, go ahead, why don't you initiate a call on Skype to his cell phone?
Do you have
him lined up that way? I do.
Well, you can do it then because I really don't have him that way.
All right, Bob, I'm going to try that right now, so answer your phone.
Okay, and then just click off of the computer.
Linda says not to do that. She says keep going. Linda is Joe's wife, and he's given her instructions to give to us. They say that they can hear you and I fine, Frank, but that Bob's sound is dropping in and out.
Hmm.
Bob, let's do a test. 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3, Angela.
Okay, Pal Talk people, can you hear that? Okay, they said they heard it, so we're going to keep going. Hopefully, I'm going to back you up a little bit, Bob, to the point to where you said you saw this spherical round object, and let's go from there, see how it goes.
Right. As my eyes adjusted, I could see that this was a craft. It was a spherical craft, round. And the light that was coming from under it was illuminated from underneath. And I was shocked. And then the two lights that I had saw at the top of the Fox Canyon, emerald green lights, were off to the left of this craft, mixed in with an array of other lights that were about the same size, all floating off the ground. Then I actually noticed the movement that I had seen. I had worked my way down the hill a little bit, and it got to a point where I could actually see the shape of the forms, and that's when everything changed right there. I couldn't believe the forms that I were looking at were not human.
They were not human, and you were sure of that. You could see two beings?
Two beings and three or four smaller ones that were coming in and out of the light. Looked like they were carrying things from whatever the lights were that came out of the woods. They were walking back and forth from those lights in and out of the craft, carrying something.
And Bob, to reiterate, and since we're having technical difficulties, to be clear, and so our listeners are hearing this has been a trifecta. We've had three shows talking about the paranormal experiences that are going on in the forests of Oregon. To date, the first and second show, we basically were talking about a light phenomena and or orbs, with the exception of Angela and Randall's experience where they mention a craft. You are now, for the first time in a public arena, not only talking about just a craft, you are talking about their pilots. In other words, you are talking about what I will describe as a non-human entity or entities. Is that correct?
That is correct, Frank.
Speak up, Bob.
That is correct.
All right.
Continue.
Now, what was your photographer slash hunter guy doing?
Oh, at that point, you know, he was not in my mind at all. My mind was completely on what I was looking at. And
well, tell us what the beings looked like.
Well, the shapes were long, slender legs, slender torso, long arms, bulbous head. I couldn't tell at that distance if they were close or to be able to tell you what, you know, the skin took, you know, detail. I'm looking at silhouettes.
Right.
But when I finally saw that the ones that were small, the smaller ones were the same type of shape, only compact, small. You know, and to be able to say, well, these small ones were 3 feet and the larger ones were 6 or 7 feet. You know, I couldn't at that point, but I could discern that they weren't human shapes.
And you knew that some of them were taller and some were shorter.
Right, right.
Okay.
So about this time, I look back over to my left, and all the lights, along with the two emerald green lights, were starting to, like, roll together. And it was, I knew something was going to happen. And the two green lights shot straight up the hill directly towards me. And as they were coming, they were coming through the trees. They were, you know, and coming at a good clip right towards me. So I peeled off up to the top of the Fox Canyon, which was probably about 20 yards, and I made it there in record time and looked over my shoulder as I'm running through the field towards the gentleman that's filming the bears, pretty much screaming at the top of my lungs, pack it up, we're going, you know, let's get out of here. And when I got to him, he said, what's the problem? And I pointed, and I said, those. And he didn't say a word, well, a few choice words, but
yeah, we can't say those on the air.
not a word in getting his stuff together. And I grabbed everything that I could carry and started running off to the truck. And these lights are doing long circle patterns around us. And they're getting closer. We threw everything into the back and got into my crew cab pickup at that time. And these roads are dangerous. These logging roads are pretty dangerous. The particular one that we were on was one of the most dangerous ones I've been on. And I'm doing about 50, 60 miles an hour out of this place. These two orbs are glued to my pickup, doing a clockwise and counterclockwise circle around the crew cab, the four-door cab, to where I had to look directly over the hood of the pickup down to the road to be able to stay on it. It was not, these things were, they wanted us to stop. That's how I felt. But I kept the hammer down and hit the access road, and from the access road it turns into asphalt, and never took my foot out of it. Ended up back at this person who was staying in a motel. Got back, we never said a word. He paid me. He took out his money. He paid me. He said, I won't be going back. I said, you really don't have to pay me. He just put his hands out, shook both hands. I helped him get his stuff out of the pickup and, never saw him again. He had left some photography equipment, and I tried to get back to him with the email, address I was corresponding with him through, and the gentleman would never get back to me.
And he left some of his equipment there, didn't he? What did he leave?
He left a lens to a camera that looked really expensive, and a fairly cheap pair of night vision headset. Not a real expensive one, but still, I mean, you know, he wouldn't return my emails and wouldn't return my phone calls.
Okay. Now,
Angela, pardon me for interrupting.
Go ahead.
And if this was already asked, Bob, I was trying. I was paying attention to some of the technical difficulties we were having. What year was this?
This was 2004.
2004, and what time of year was it? Spring, summer?
This was late summer, early spring.
Late spring, or early fall. Late summer, early fall.
Late spring, early summer. If memory serves me correct, it was the end of May.
Gotcha. What, you had to be scared to death.
Oh, I was. I was, you know, I mean, there's not too much that shakes me out in the woods. I'm at home there, and, you know, this was not my first sighting of a craft.
Mm-hmm.
This was my first sighting of the occupants. I mean, you know, but as far as seeing things in my lifetime, I have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nothing like that.
Now, this person, obviously you knew his name. Is this person reachable? Can we find this guy if we had to?
You know, I tried to get a hold of him for over a year, and he wouldn't return any phone calls, any emails. And then I started getting the when you send an email off and you get a failure notice.
Right.
I started to get those, and then disconnected his phone.
But you do have his real, his accurate name. I mean, that kind of thing.
Yes, I do.
And he made it clear that night that he was going to pay you, and but he didn't care to go back.
And he said very few words. He mumbled quite a bit under his breath. And I didn't really drink up until that point. And, you know, I started having a few drinks after that. And I'm nothing but a social drinker, and found myself
imagine that
a few more than I usually do.
Yeah.
Okay, and so now you know why, you know, my eyes were really glued to what I saw, because I was waiting for some kind of movement or something to step out of the shadows, but that didn't happen on my sighting. But we've got about 2 minutes before break here, and I see somebody that's saying Angela was probably hoaxed. And could I be hoaxed? Yes, I could be, just like anybody else could be. But it sure was an unnatural event in that forest, in my opinion. And we used night vision goggles to look everywhere. My husband used them, too, to look for people or look for generators or something like that. But I don't see how it could have been done. In that environment, it is so thickly vegetated, and it was on such a steep slope that it would have been, I would say it would take somebody that had a Steven Spielberg budget to pull that off, and I don't think Bob's that guy.
Well, in addition to that, we're talking about multiple witnesses, different times and different experiences. So, you know, we don't want to throw anything out until everything's concluded. But yeah, that's a hard sell for a hoax. But with your specific experience, and then also, of course, what Randall saw that you weren't able to get out of the van to see.
Right. We're going to go to break now. We're a little bit past break time. You guys come back in about 8 minutes, and you'll hear more from Bob Pitchell, Frank Warren, and myself.
Good evening, and welcome to this week's worldwide broadcast of The Joyner Report. Now here's your host, Angela Joyner.
Of the Joyner Report at WPRN-FM New Orleans and at www.paranormalradionetwork.com. Tonight, we're bringing you an exclusive report. Bob Pitchell is with us. The last two shows, he was known as Oregon Bob. We've just released his name tonight. He has been sharing some information with us. His experiences in the dark forests of Oregon, and my co-host tonight is Frank Warren of the UFO Chronicles.
Hello, everybody.
Okay, Bob, you just told us about it's just an unbelievable experience. Your first experience was in 2004. You had taken a photographer out that wanted to get some shots of some animals. And during this time, you actually saw a craft, and you saw the pilots of the craft, and you described them as being thin, slender beings. Some were taller, some were shorter. You were never able to get back in touch with the photographer. And that's about where we left off, I believe. So, Bob, are you with me?
Yes, I am, Ann.
Okay. Now, why did you invite me to go out on these excursions with you?
Well, you know, one man's voice or one person's voice is one person. And for the magnitude of what was going on, I knew that I was going to have people more credible than I. And so I started to research the UFO community and who was who and what was going on. And about that time, when the research was going on, of course, I was watching the happenings in Stevensville. So that's, you know, I looked at both you and Steve Allen, and I thought, you know, I need to get to that woman. I need her for a witness. Very credible person. And
well,
that's
thank you.
Seeking out some credible people.
And at that time, let me interject real quick, Ange, and Bob. Well, at that time, of course, the Stephenville Lights was predominant in mainstream media. I mean, it was everywhere at that particular point in time when you decided to do that, to reach out to Angela and Steve Allen.
Right, exactly.
Well, you know, it took you a while to decide to come out with your name and to share your experiences publicly. Why? Why did you wait so long?
Well, as you know, as time went on, and I, you know, spent a great deal of time, actually thousands of hours in the forest and in different locations, places outside of the forest. That'll be another story, but the amount of time that I had spent observing these things, I had a lot of different things happen to me, and I felt privileged to be able to witness some of the phenomenon that you know I was seeing in real time, and knowing where things were going to happen. It was quite a journey for years, and I didn't want to sell this thing out to Hollywood or commercialize it, or you know, have 150 hillbillies in the woods trying to pull out a body. And I felt that I needed to find the right people, but it was a real learning experience. And the amount of things that have happened to me, I just didn't know how I would tell people. You know, how I would.
Well, because when you start to tell people some of these things, and I know, you know, it took me a while to come to grips with what I saw while I was there with you. That was the first time that I really had the sense of what it takes for a witness to share their story, because it's not an easy thing to do.
No. I basically lost most of my friends that, you know, found that my life has completely changed, just completely in all aspects. And, you know, some, you know, I try to find some, you know, good aspects of change. There really haven't been any good aspects. It's been, I'm kind of a burden, and
why do you look at it as a burden? Because you don't have to share now. I mean, you decided to come forward, but you don't have to.
Well, in my search to find out more and to learn more, you know, with the amount of experiences that had happened, along with those experiences, experiences come answers. And I felt that in my capacity that it's my duty to come forward and reach out to more brilliant minds than mine, people who are scientific in nature, that can come in and research this thing and do the right thing. Don't sell it out, but try to do the right thing. And that's been my direction. That's where I want to go. I want to involve the right people to document this thing and not sell it out, because it is happening. It is real, and it's bigger than all of us.
So would you say that's your goal in releasing the information, is to attract some scientists and some people that can help figure this thing out? That's your goal?
I don't think we're going to figure this thing out. I think that we have an opportunity to establish some kind of contact, more contact than I've experienced. We're on the tip of an iceberg here, and we're exposing the top, and underneath that iceberg is a rabbit hole that, well, I think it will mesmerize everyone that follows it. There is no one that this hasn't touched to date that is not completely taken with it. It not only begs professional research, but it needs the attention, and it needs it now. As quickly as I can obtain those right people and we can get this thing going, it's a mission to continue this. That's in a nutshell, that's it.
Well, when we had Jack on last week, we announced then that he was planning on doing a documentary with you and Jamie McDowell. And, he was hoping to get the word out that way. Is that in progress?
Both Jamie and Jack, great people, fantastic people. They've experienced things that are bigger.
You need to speak up a little, please, Bob.
Yeah, they've experienced things, Angela, that, like yourself, are bigger than all of us. And they're both in the video production business. And, they've been out a half a dozen times, and I've got hundreds and hundreds of hours in. And we're talking possibly about doing a documentary on what happened to the film crew, because it really was a fantastic story, and one that they were definitely involved in, and I think should be able to share in that. To commercialize a small part of it like that for people, if it helps get the word out, that's okay with me, but we're still just in negotiations about that.
Okay, so that documentary is still in negotiations, and that would deal strictly with what happened that night with that particular crew. So now, you listened to the show where I interviewed Jamie, and at the beginning of that interview, she mentioned seeing something that looked like some kind of holographic figure, and a cameraman with her saw it too. What do you think she was seeing there?
Nathan Hansen was with us on that trip. He's one of my fellow hunters, and as soon as she saw that, I was explaining to them, just a few tips to listen to us. If we say it's time to go, it's time to go, things like that, to stay close, don't wander away. And Jamie pointed to my left, and as soon as she did, I followed her finger, and Nathan was sitting directly behind me, and there was a being standing there, and I'd seen them before during the day. And what I would liken that to, for anyone who had ever watched the movie Predator with Arnold Schwarzenegger,
uh-huh,
when that alien is moving through the woods, it blends in with the woods, and it resembles that so close, it's uncanny. And there was a being standing there, and it did turn around, and you could see the motion of it. It was leaving fast. I could see it turn. I could see the back of it. I could see it moving into the bushes quick.
Now, you're saying that it's similar to the Schwarzenegger movie in the fact that it kind of has some kind of stealthy way to blend in with the surroundings as it moves.
Yeah, yeah.
But not really in how that creature looked.
No, no. These, the beings that I've seen in that, they're classic grays. They are the tall grays and the small grays. And now,
Bob, let me interject here just for a second. When I personally think of the term holographic image, the first thing that comes to my mind is military. Do you think any way whatsoever that this could be some sort of military exercise or experiment or some kind of new tech?
You know, I basically, Frank, I ruled that out just a few years, and I was open to that, but completely ruled that out in the areas that that we're talking about. I don't completely rule out the military. I believe the military is doing a lot and knows a lot, but I believe they're just as baffled by these beings as you know. But I, as far as answering your question, no, not in those areas.
Well, why did you rule out the military?
I've never seen a human form in any of those areas associated with any craft or portals or just have never.
Have you seen a military presence? It's separate from any crafts and or beings?
I've heard of a military presence that is supposed to have an underground base. Someone who I would think just wouldn't speak out of turn, you know, not knowing and shoot from the hip. But I have no proof of that, and I've never seen anything to that effect.
Okay. Now, when I was with you that night and we saw what appeared to be a craft on the ground with some kind of fleshy bottom to it, something that absorbed the light in a different way, when the light went out from top to bottom, like you were pulling down a window shade, Randall and I were scrambling to get up because, you know, we weren't talking in a voice like we're talking right now. We were all talking very quietly, almost whispering, and because it was just kind of spooky. You just felt spooky. And we got back up to the van. You and I got in the van, and I said, "What was that light, and what did you tell me?"
What I felt the light was?
Right.
No doubt about it, some kind of portal. I've actually witnessed these ships come out of the portals. And if you remember, the light was shining on the craft.
Right.
So the craft had to come from the direction of the light or directly to the light.
And you walked down the road. You said, "I'll see if there's a better viewpoint. You stay here." And I stayed where I was at. What did you see when you walked down the road?
I walked down and flanked the position. First, I was even with it, and I could see that it was a portal. This portal light basically would be like I walked behind it, Angela, and I could see barely a glow behind it. And you remember how intensely bright it was.
Right.
When I would get even with the light, I could see that it was only coming from one side. So I knew at that point that, in my mind, that it was a craft and it did come out of that portal. There's no doubt in my mind. I'd seen it numerous times.
Now, why didn't you call me down there so that I could see that too?
You had the best vantage point in the house to see the craft, and I knew it was a craft, and that's, you couldn't have had a better spot. What I'll never forget is, I'm going in after it, and I said, "Randall, grab her." And you were going to go right in after it. I'll tell you, you're the most tenacious guest I've ever had. And obviously a very brave gal to run towards something like that. Yeah, you got my heart at that time in the palm of your hand.
Well, it was something I wanted to do. I really did want to go there and get down to the thing and touch it and look around at just I just felt compelled to do that. Maybe it's a good thing you told Randall to grab me. I don't know. But, you know, I really would have liked to have seen the portal, too. But I remember, you know, that night, and you were talking to me, you said something about, you know, well, this is your first time. You can only handle so much.
Well, right. I mean, you know, just, you know, your adrenaline, every hair on your body, every, you know, sense that you have is fixed on what you're looking at. And obviously, you're waiting for movement. Why? It's because what you're seeing is an unearthly craft. You know, you expect to see movement. Human or not, you expect to see movement because you're looking at something that you know is not made with, well, not made with human hands, I'll say that, but you know it's not a worldly thing. And you do expect to see movement. It's crazy. And you coin it real well, Angela. It's hard to get your head around.
Yeah, it really is.
It is.
I don't, you know, from my own personal perspective and having interviewed many different witnesses in regards to UFOs and then some, the only thing that I could equate it to, I remember the first time I went to the Grand Canyon and seeing this big gash in the ground, and to coin Angela's phrase, it was hard to wrap my mind around that. I was seeing it, but it was hard to believe. And obviously something like we're discussing tonight, you know, far exceeds that. So, but that was the only thing that I could equate it to, when you see something that you've been taught all your life isn't supposed to be there.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, now, Frank, here's a question for you. When I got back, I called you and I said, look, something's going on out there, and I told you this is what I saw. And I asked Bob if it would be all right if I put him in touch with you. And you've had several conversations with Bob. Why haven't you gone?
Gone up there personally to see it?
Right.
Well, the short answer to that is I'm a victim of our economic ways at the moment, and I own my own business, and quite frankly, I just haven't been able to afford to go see it, which actually is one of the components of the problem of this particular case and many others. We need some assets. There has to be financing, you know, to investigate this thing properly. We need resources, and you know, a lot of people that aren't knowledgeable about these things, or the what Stan Friedman would call the noisy negativists, to say, "Oh, here it comes! I knew there was a money thing." Well, point of fact is, you know, I mean, look at SETI. For God's sakes, wouldn't it be nice to have, you know, a third of their budget to look into these things properly and from a scientific perspective?
What they're doing is a waste of money, I think.
Well, there you have it. And I've always said the biggest problem with ufology is lack of funding. And I'm here to tell you, believe me, that's what needs to happen. I'd have been up there a long time ago with Bob's first invite. But not only that, I mean, just to bring my involvement in it, and this is a good question, when you first told me about this, and even after talking to Bob, I have to tell you, you know, and a lot of people might laugh at this, but I do come from a skeptical position. I go where the evidence leads me. And I'm very analytical in terms of my own investigations that I've been involved in. And let's face it, what we're dealing with, or at least with my personal involvement from Jump Street, was an anecdote from a stranger, that being Bob. Of course, Bob and I are now friends. We've had many, many, many long conversations. But one of the things that gave me pause is because I know you. I know you better than I know Randall, but I know both of you are honest, sober people. I know that you, in fact, did go out there, and I know, and you can take it to the bank, that what you have said in tonight's show as well as the previous night's show and what you've recounted to me personally is true. and that you can take to the bank. And that's what, you know, set the hook in me, and I said, look, there's something to this. Now, since that time, I've got to know Bob better, and I feel that he is he's being honest in with what he's experiencing, and he believes what he is saying. And then to further shore that up, he has brought other sober witnesses into this, very credible people, as you know, these resumes are out there from the previous guests, and they have shared their particular experiences. You know, this case is very, very intriguing, and I have since, as I've spoken to you guys privately, shared this with some of my colleagues in the UFO community. And it's giving them pause at this point. Hopefully, this will gain momentum where eventually we can gather the resources to jump into this thing and investigate it properly. And I've got to, you know, my hat's off to Bob. You know, bear in mind, too, although Bob's coming out tonight for our listeners' benefit, you know, we have honored his confidentiality for the last 2 years or so, as well as everybody else. And this is important. This is a big issue. And much like abductees, for example, you know, it's a very private thing. When you talk about these things, I mean, let's face it, we're trained all of our life to know that these things don't exist. Not only from a societal point of view, but that's our upbringing. That's our parental upbringing. It goes against the very grain that we've been raised with.
It really does.
You know, so, yeah, so these are a big step, and I commend Bob for stepping forward the way that he has, as well as the other witnesses.
I do, too. Hey, Bob, let's talk about those portals some more. Are portals something, is that something into another dimension? You believe that's how these crafts and beings are traveling, right?
Yeah, definitely. Interdimensional, I think.
Speak up a little.
Oh, I would say it's like the portals remind me of like interdimensional travel. But I have seen portals that you cannot see with the naked eye and only through field glasses during the day, a pair of binoculars. And I witnessed one. It was huge during the day, and I was in the forest, but looking into another forest with different foliage in this portal, and it had to be about 50 feet across and 50 feet high. It was an archway, and around the rim of it, I'll never forget, like a beveled mirror would reflect the light.
Uh-huh.
It had that look all the way around the edge and was just sparkling. But I'm looking into this thing, and standing where I'm standing, there's no wind, nothing's blowing. But the trees and the grass and the foliage in this portal are blowing. And I take my glasses down, and I'm looking at scrubland. I put my glasses back up, and here I'm looking into another place. And I actually saw a human-looking figure that looked like it was he was dressed in dark clothing. He had long, blonde hair. His hair was tied back. And I actually yelled out to this guy, and I said, what are you doing up there, buddy? And took the glasses back down and thought, I'm talking to nobody. I'm looking into another place, another time. Put the glasses back up, and at about that time, I called my partner over, and I said, come here and look at this. Stand right in front of me. I said, what do you see on that corner? He said, well, I see the corner and scrub. I said, now look through the glasses right there. What do you see? His first words were, oh, my God, what is that, Bob? And I said, it looks like a portal to me. I said, do you see a person in there? And he said, no. And I said, describe to me what you see. And he said, I see a large pine tree, not like the trees here, and a large limb, like, blowing in front of the portal. And there's a rock wall. And I see tall grass, and it's blowing. And then a pathway and forest behind it. And I was dumbfounded. It was exactly what I was looking at. You know, knock on wood, I'm not crazy. We're seeing this. And we watched it for hours. I wanted to see that being come back to it. And it, you know, this is going to sound crazy. Finally, you know, just left because it wasn't going away. And, you know, I'd seen enough. I mean, you know, it was crazy. But, yeah, different size of portals. I've seen lights actually open up on the forest floor and seen craft fly out of the forest floor. I've seen portals that just hang out in the air and only produce light from one side and then have a different array of small, for a lack of better words, I call them sentinels, small craft that do nothing but, you know, too small to be manned. And I believe that those type of craft gather information and try to steer you in the wrong direction of where the real action is. Yeah, definitely, they have to be portals, and I just don't know what else you would call them.
Well, you know, here's something that I have a question about. Here, you know, the first beings you told us about, short and tall, slender, sounded like the typical grays that you hear people talk about. Now you've told us about a human-looking being that had blonde hair tied back. So, I mean, well, am I correct? Is that what
yes.
you said?
He looked human to me, although I couldn't see the texture of his skin, but the features looked human to me.
Well, now, Bob, to play devil's advocate, and I'm sure many of our listeners are thinking of the same thing and would like to ask the question or at least comment on it, that as we've heard over the years, that sounds like the typical Nordic that people and or witnesses often relate to, or at least, and your skeptics would say, is part of UFO mythology.
You know, Frank, I did a fair amount of research. I know, you know, I've heard and read things on the Nordics. I don't know if that's what I witnessed. All I know is that this being, I would have continued to walk towards this being thinking it was human. I actually called out to it, and then I thought, well, that's stupid. You know, I'm calling out to something. He obviously can't hear me.
Okay, Bob, why didn't you walk to the portal? Why didn't you get closer?
Oh, well, we did, both of us, that day. We walked up to it, stuck our hands, you know, in it, and it was just scrub. There was nothing there until you put the goggles back up to it, and you could see through it again, you know, the field glasses. But with the naked eye, you know, you could see nothing. And I could, you know, I have no sophisticated equipment. I wouldn't know how to try to measure things or take samples or do any of that.
Well, now help me out here, Frank, but essentially binoculars or field glasses, there's no real trick to those. I mean, they basically kind of zoom in and magnify. So why would... That doesn't make sense to me that binoculars would be able to see something that you couldn't see with your naked eye.
Well, assuming that you could see it with your naked eye if it was closer to you. You know, in other words, binoculars, just all they are is going to magnify your normal light that you see at that particular vision, opposed to infrared or another spectrum of light. So as long as it was visible in a normal light situation, you know, what we would call visible light, you should see it. It would amplify it. But if it wasn't visible under those circumstances, which actually was going to be one of my questions, in particular in reference to the Nordic, it seems to be that particular experience was associated with what we're calling a portal, right, Bob?
Right.
In other words, you didn't see this. You didn't see that being isolated. I mean, it was always connected to a portal or through a portal, if I
right.
understand you correctly. Okay. But that's not the case with all the beings that you have seen.
Correct.
In other words, the grays, those were independent. They weren't. That wasn't through a portal or anything.
No. I what I'm saying is I've seen them both ways in the coming out of the portals. You know, live. I mean, there. You know, no portal. There's a shift.
And I think it's fair to say that, or at least it should be mentioned that, you know, portals aren't new to ufology. In fact, before we went on the air, I had mentioned, you know, I'm in Northern California, and there has been talk of a portal in the American River Canyon, and I've actually heard that independently from different folks that don't know each other. That rumor has been floating around here for years, and I'm aware of other places in the country where this phenomena has been alleged to take place, or where portals exist. And that, of course, opens up an entire other can of worms.
And there's not even any proof that portals exist, really.
No. There's no smoking gun evidence.
Hearing about them from witnesses. They keep coming up time and time again.
As what's described as being a portal. And when I say it opens up another can of worms, I mean, what is that? Is that a doorway to another dimension? Are we talking about Twilight Zone stuff? It really gets deep.
We're talking about things that we can't understand. And, you know, that's what really gets me. I hear, you know, we're trying to label these things when, you know, it's really impossible for us to label them. We call them a portal. I don't know what they call them. We're dealing with technology that is so far advanced from what we have that these things can manipulate time and space. So they can mess with our little cameras and they can mess with our equipment. We've been able to find out over the years that they do have chinks in their armor. There are ways to get close. And
well, Bob, in your opinion, I mean, with having just said what you said, that they are advanced in these ways, would it be fair to say that they could also manipulate an image of themselves or how they appear to an onlooker or a witness?
Oh, I believe that. Frank, exactly. They could make themselves into other objects. I've actually witnessed it.
You've not only witnessed different beings, you have also witnessed different crafts. And when I was with you that night, had you ever seen a craft like the one I saw?
Yeah, the organic-looking tentacles and the shape of that craft I'd seen, you know, many times before.
Now, that was not what Randall saw when you were driving us to your home from your airport. Had you seen that type of craft before also?
Yeah, that would be like taking a pool rack and cutting 2 inches off both sides and pushing the triangle shape a little closer together. It was an oblong triangle. It was that, you know, gunmetal gray dark bottom. The tree line where we were that day, the trees are probably 100 feet in that area. So it was no more than 100 feet over our heads. Because it was at tree level, but more of a cropped triangle shape. And I'd seen those crafts several times. Also, acorn-shaped craft. But then these craft have the ability to shape-shift also. Just blow your mind to sit there and actually you're looking at something changing into a different shape.
And I should mention that while I was at your home, your wife shared what she had seen with myself and my husband, and she doesn't go out with you anymore. Can you tell us why?
I wanted my family to know that I wasn't crazy. I wasn't a six-pack short of a case. Dad's okay. Your husband's okay. I'm going to take you guys out and prove this to you. You're going to stay away from it. And the reason why is I've had a lot of experiences and some very unpleasant experiences that I would hate for them to go through.
Okay, so you took your family and you showed them what you'd been looking at, and then because you worried about their safety, you didn't allow them to go anymore.
Right, right.
Now, why, you know, so are we looking at something that wouldn't be what you would say is benevolent?
I would say more indifferent, maybe not caring, but not completely hostile as far as the grays in that area. There are other forms of grays that are mean. They're not nice. They don't care about us. You create a lot of mental baggage when this kind of stuff starts happening to you and you continue to go in that direction. And just all of the above, I didn't want my family to go through the same things that I was going through. But yeah, to answer your question, I believe the grays in that area, they're on their own agenda, and for some reason they're allowing me to be there, you know, to be able to witness these things. And, you know, some things I've tried to film at point-blank range, and I've had cameras fried. I've had a pair of night vision binoculars that I was about 20 feet from a 7-foot gray, and I was talking to him. I said, "I see you. I said, I'm not going to hurt you. I just want to get you on film." And I'm holding my thumbs on the bottom of my binoculars, digital night vision, and all of a sudden it got so hot, it actually burnt my thumbs, melted the plastic on the bottom of my night vision, and it went out, and I, the crazy thing is, I said, "That cost me $600. Great.
Ah.
How am I going to replace this?" I mean, I wasn't worried about standing there in the dark with this guy, this being, but I was really mad that now I don't have night vision.
Well, and here you go, because that leads back to Jamie's report, and she said that, you know, she had the best of the best equipment. It was like a 700 Sony or something, and I'm not up to date on all of that stuff, but whatever it was, some kind of energy knocked out her camera, knocked her and a crew member to the ground, knocked the breath out of them. So at the time, I was thinking, well, how did that happen? Did some entity know that she had the capability to get a picture and they weren't going to let it happen?
I believe that's what happened. I'd never been in an area with that many people. I didn't know if it was going to work or not, because if you put too much pressure on any area, they'll move. But then I believe there are some areas that I have that I've protected that no one has been in, where they will not move. They're not going to leave these areas. They're integrated with modes of their transportation. They're always in these areas. They protect these areas with things I call sentinels.
Okay, well, that leads me to another question. Why do you think they're there? Why are they in Oregon?
I believe they've been here a lot longer than we have, Angela. And, you know, I believe that these races are eons old. And, you know, you kind of think, well, this is our planet. Well, you know, I'm kind of starting to wonder, well, who was here first? Is it really our planet? And why are, you know, I just believe that they've been here a long, long time.
Well, so is that just their habitat? Or, you know, we hear of these beings all over the world. I mean, do you think they're everywhere, or do you think this is just there in Oregon? I don't know.
Well, I believe that, it's not just in Oregon. I believe it's widespread.
I don't, Bob, let me interject just for a moment. One of the things, of course, that we can do and we've been doing is speculate on I like to call it human explication versus alien intent, if in fact we're talking about aliens. I don't think that we can do that. I mean, there's just not enough data on the table to interpret their intentions. We just don't know what their makeup is, you know, and or whomever they are. However, getting back to the camera thing again and other forms of evidence, the observation is we now have other evidence to look at, regardless of the intent. I mean, here we have a physical interaction. We have something that has actually affected cameras. I think that's important in regards to scientific research. I mean, from the layperson's perspective, or somebody that's just hearing this from the first time, this begins with an anecdote, primarily from one person to begin with, you, Bob. Then at that point, you have brought other people into the fray that have had their own independent experiences, some very credible, sober witnesses, impeccable people. In fact, there are many more witnesses that we're just scratching the surface so far. So, you know, then you add eyewitness accounts into the preponderance of evidence. Now we're talking about a physical interaction, with technical equipment. That's impressive to me as far as evidence goes. The next thing, if resources can be gathered and a proper investigation can take place, you know, now we need to look for physical evidence. And you and I talked about this one specific event a few nights ago about an up-close and personal experience you had. My first question was, why did you go and inspect the area? Did you gather any physical evidence? Did you take pictures of the ground after a craft left or if a being was there? And your answer was short and to the point. You didn't do that. And I asked you, well, why not? And you told me, because you were scared. And I thought, well, that makes sense. But the goal, of course, would be, because these are repeated events and the evidence is starting to spread into other categories, obviously a goal would be to get some type of physical and or forensic evidence. And the cameras themselves, if they've been physically damaged, this, of course, is, you know, adds to the evidence. There is a physical or some sort of interaction between whatever these things are and this equipment. That makes me sit up and pay attention.
Right, right. You know, it's like we were talking about SETI a little bit and the massive amount of money that I believe Paul Allen and Bill Gates and these different people have put into this thing. And then I look at other people that are out there that are working in the aerospace industry that have huge amounts of money. And, my message to those guys are, listen up. I can save you a lot of money. You're looking in the wrong places. I can teach these people a lot. And, my God, let's start looking in the right directions let's get the right people involved. We've only got so much time on this earth, and I'm going to devote the rest of my life to bringing this to life as much as possible. No matter what happens to me, that's secondary. This information has to get out. People have to. We deserve, this whole country deserves to know the truth. And I really feel that we live in a censored society. And I would love to be a part of breaking that those fences down, Frank. I feel that I can. But I need support. I need people and resources to get this done. And if I were trying to make money off this, I would have sold this out a long time ago to a cheap Hollywood producer.
Sure.
When in fact, you know, I've really lost about everything pursuing.
Right. Well, Bob, we're about out of time here, and I want to tell you how much I appreciate you coming forward and how much I've enjoyed talking with you. I think we'll have you back sometime in April if you're agreeable to that.
I am, and I want to thank you, Angela, you know, for coming forward, telling your story. You know, without your voices, mine is just a small voice crying nowhere. And together, I think we can get something done, and I think we're on the right track. And I hope your listeners enjoyed this. Yes, I would be honored to come back, Angela.
All right. I appreciate that. And, Frank, I appreciate you for being here tonight. I want to say that next week, tune in for Dr. Lynn Kitai and new information on her experiences and Phoenix Lights. I want to let you know quickly here, I know I'm almost out of time, I'm going to be speaking at the Aztec UFO Symposium in Aztec, New Mexico, March 26th and 27th, along with Art Campbell, Paula Harris, Ken Thomas, Dan Romanek, Lynn Buchanan, and I've just gotten word that Stanton Friedman is going to be there. For more information, go to www.aztecufo.com. If you can be there, I would love to meet you. Frank is going to be guest hosting for me on March 19th and 26th while I'm gone. Real quickly, Frank, give us a heads up on what you're going to be doing.
I'm going to save the second week as a surprise for our listeners, but we're going to continue the Phoenix Lights theme as it is the 13th anniversary coming up. And I'm going to bring back both Mike Fortson, who, by the way, is in our virtual auditorium, as well as Frances and Emma Barwood. And we're going to lay this this flare video to rest once and for all. The 10 o'clock flare videos were just that. They were flare videos. There was a recent National Geo documentary that has kind of brought that back into the limelight and sort of confused the issue again. But those things have been analyzed six ways to Sunday, and we're gonna take that. In fact, by the way, Mike Fortson was in that documentary. He was portrayed in that heavily, and he and I and Frances will lay this flare video to rest once and for all, and hopefully get the focus back to the 8 o'clock hour where the thousands of witnesses saw this large V-shaped craft.
All right,
that's where the focus needs to be.
That sounds great. Okay, I'm going to close it down now. I appreciate everybody in the chat room. I appreciate all the listeners. Stay tuned next week for Dr. Lynn Kitai. Good night. Bye.